This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight.
A new UN report describes global food supplies as robust, but famine, drought, and conflict are preventing millions of people from getting enough to eat.
That's VOA's Jody Kapawa reporting. Details coming up also. International Organization for Migration is appealing for $24.6 million to help victims of Somalia's drought. And there is a desperate move by Save the Children to educate children after 7 years of conflict and insurgent attacks by Boko Haram. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, a new UN report describes global food supplies as robust, but famine, drought, and conflict are preventing millions of people from getting enough to eat. VOA's Jody Kapawa reports.
The UN Food and Agriculture Organization has released its quarterly crop prospects and food situation report. FAO economist Jonathan Pound explains what a robust food supply means.
At the global level, so aggregating the production of all countries in the world, there was a small increase in global cereal production this year. There was a 1.1% increase in 2016 compared to the previous year in 2015. So it implies that we have a good supply situation.
Besides strong cereal production gains worldwide, the FAO reports a record recovery for larger cereal crops in Asia, Europe, and Central America. Despite strong harvests in much of the world, famine has been declared in parts of South Sudan and looms in Somalia, Nigeria, and Yemen. All are affected by ongoing conflict.
Conflict both affects the imports of food into the country, but also within the country as well to distribute the food. But then you also have impact on the agricultural system directly, where farmers aren't able to access their farmland in some cases, and they aren't able to access inputs as well. And so this limits the productive capacity of farming households.
About 100,000 people in South Sudan face famine in Leer and Mayandit counties in Unity State. But the FAO report warns of an elevated risk of famine in two nearby counties as well. But there are problems countrywide. Nearly 5 million people in South Sudan are at risk. That number is expected to jump by 500,000 at the peak of the lean season in July.
And then after that, we expect the harvest of the good crops to be available, and that should lead to some improvements in the food security status.
In Somalia, the number of people who are classified as severely food insecure has more than doubled in the past 6 months to nearly 3 million people. Pound says Somalia has been the victim of conflict, insecurity, and drought.
There have been three consecutive poor rainy seasons, so that's compounded the impact of the conflict.
The FAO says more than 8 million people face acute food insecurity in northern Nigeria. That's despite an above-average cereal harvest in the country. The Boko Haram insurgency and the depreciation of the Naira are to blame.
It's contributed to pushing up prices, impinging on food access for some of the population. Despite having a good harvest, there's likely to be an increase in the number of people who are food insecure as well.
And in Yemen, the FAO reports 17 million people, two-thirds of the population, are food insecure. About half of those need emergency aid as the war there goes on. Conflicts and violence could also worsen food insecurity in Burundi, Central African Republic, the DRC, Afghanistan, Iraq, Myanmar, and Syria. The report says 37 countries require outside food assistance. 28 of them are in Africa. Much of that is due, it says, to the lingering effects of the El Nino weather event, namely drought. Pound says those figures are holding fairly steady.
The Global Information Early Warning System within FAO, we track and monitor these countries on a quarterly basis. I mean, the numbers more or less remain at this level. A few countries have come in and a few countries have come out over the past years.
Improvements are expected in southern Africa this year as countries recover from drought. South Africa is expected to have a bumper maize crop, but Zimbabwe, Mozambique, Zambia, and Malawi are among the countries battling an invasion of the fall armyworm. The Food and Agriculture Organization will release its next Crop Prospects and Food Situation report in June. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
The International Organization for Migration is appealing for $24.6 million to provide life-saving assistance to hundreds of thousands of the most vulnerable victims of Somalia's drought. Many of them are now threatened by famine, as Lisa Schlein reports from IOM headquarters in Geneva.
Humanitarian agencies report worrying similarities between the current situation in Somalia and the 2011 famine that killed more than one quarter of a million people. The International Organization for Migration warns the severity of this new drought could put an even greater number of people at risk. IOM spokeswoman Olivia Hayden says a huge increase in humanitarian aid is needed to avert famine in some of the worst affected areas.
Wages are collapsing, local food prices are rising, animal deaths are increasing, malnutrition rates are starting to rise, water prices are spiraling, and Somalis are moving in growing numbers in search of food and water. Without assistance, many people face malnutrition and significantly increased risk of disease, loss of livelihood, and even death.
The IOM appeal is targeting more than 1 million of the estimated 6.2 million drought-affected Somalis in need of assistance through June. Hayden tells VOA that the IOM and other aid agencies have been increasing their humanitarian operations over the past few months to prevent people from starving to death.
We're hoping that the surge of our staff and supplies and activities will continue for the next couple of weeks, and then we'll be at full capacity in order to respond. But we can only do that if we have the appropriate resources to do so. So that's why we're launching this now, even though we have already been responding, even though we have already been alerting about the situation.
Hayden says it will be almost impossible to respond to the needs of this drought without funding from international donors. She says priority needs include food, water and sanitation, health and nutrition, protection and shelter. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Drought is hurting Eastern Africa's parks and game reserves and the creatures that reside in them. The Kenya Wildlife Service says dozens of animals have already died because of the lack of water. Mohamed Yusuf has more from Nairobi.
Kenyan wildlife officials say animals at reserves in the north of the country and the coast region face starvation after low rainfall at the end of last year. Last month, the government declared the drought a national disaster. Kenya Wildlife Service spokesman Paul Gatitu says lack of water and grazing land has pushed some animals into human settlements, increasing the risk of human-wildlife conflict.
We've had impact on wildlife, particularly the outside, not in the protected areas. Ijara was the first area that we noticed, and next to Boni Forest were some dams, and which now dried up, and that forced a number of animals to now go seeking for water and struggling to access water, and we lost five buffaloes who are stuck in the mud in that place.
The wildlife agency says it has lost 15 hippos in Lake Kenyatta, Lamu County. Kahindi Lekahaile of the African Network for Animal Welfare blames a lack of preparation for the suffering and deaths of animals.
What we are seeing is that the effects of drought are being made worse by ignorance, poverty and desperation by ignored people who would have actually supported the wildlife as the wildlife actually moves out to look for pastures and water. So a drought will always be with us. You know, it's how we manage drought. Now, wildlife is suffering as a result of us not preparing for drought and us not actually managing our resources properly.
The wild animals attract millions of dollars in tourist revenue every year. Tourism is a leading foreign exchange earner for Kenya after agriculture. The industry employs more than 200,000 people. Gatitu of the Kenya Wildlife Service says his agency is digging more wells and supplying water to the animals.
We work together with organizations like Big Life, and we provide water to the schools. So the communities get water away from the field where they would have otherwise now been encountering wildlife. In places like Lamu, we've actually supplied water to those dams.
Wildlife in Kenya already face constant threats from poachers and communities living around the conservation areas. The Department of Resource Surveys and Remote Sensing says Kenya has lost 68% of its wildlife in the last four decades. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
You were listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Fifteen past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. A UN report indicates global food supplies are plenty, yet famine, drought and conflict are preventing millions of people from getting enough to eat. The International Organization for Migration is appealing for $24.6 million to help victims of Somalia's drought. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. The International Child Advocacy Organization Save the Children says children as old as 15 are flooding into preschool facilities in northeast Nigeria. It's part of a desperate move to get an education after more than 7 years of conflict and insurgent attacks by Boko Haram. An estimated 1,200 schools have been damaged or destroyed, while at least 611 teachers have been reported murdered and a further 19,000 displaced. They say the situation is symptomatic of an education crisis across the Lake Chad region. The area includes Nigeria, Niger, Cameroon, and Chad, now home to a quarter of the world's estimated 59 million out-of-school children. Katharina Bu is a senior advocacy advisor for Save the Children. She has just returned from northeast Nigeria and spoke with reporter Kim Lewis about education crisis there and about what is needed to ensure children get access to quality education.
Talking about education in northeast Nigeria, it is important to look at how the situation also was before the crisis. Actually, this area around the Lake Chad was pretty much already experiencing an education crisis prior to the ongoing conflict. Looking at numbers, which we have to be careful about because data is very poor, but estimates show that across the four countries currently suffering from this particular conflict, they were already in an education crisis with a total of 14 million children out of school prior to the crisis. That is actually 25% or one-fourth of all children out of school globally. And what we've seen is that conflict, which has lasted now for almost 8 years, have exacerbated the barriers for children to attend school and worsened what I would call the world's largest education crisis. Schools have been targeted, teachers have been killed, and more than 1,000 schools have been attacked, many of them destroyed, and approximately 19,000 teachers have fled.
So then where does one start in terms of trying to repair the problem and make it so that children can get an education? Because I know it is a huge task to take on, but where do you start?
That's a very good question. I would start on a positive note. What we've seen is that actually the crisis and how it has affected education in particular have actually created a momentum right now. We see, especially in Maiduguri, which is the largest city in Borno State, the most affected state in northeast Nigeria, we see that because education has been targeted in particular, children and parents are actually more concerned now than before about giving their children education. At least we have some engagement from the community and from parents and children to actually get children into school. So that is very, very good. And of course, then what is needed is to start step by step to build a sustainable school system that can actually absorb all of the out-of-school children. That will take time, but it's what is needed. At the same time, we see that many children have not been at school at all or have lost education due to the conflict. For them, it's important that we get accelerated learning programs to make sure that we can get them quickly into the education system, especially then targeting youth as well.
Also, young girls particularly have a hard time in getting education. Will there be a separate focus on them or more emphasis on girls getting education?
Definitely. This is very important for Save the Children globally and in this context. What we see is that if you are a girl in Nigeria and in these countries, you are left behind in many, many ways, and also when it comes to education. While the average Nigerian expects to receive 9 years of schooling, that figure drops to just 2 years for girls in the Northeast. And actually, we have estimates that show that half of 9 to 12-year-olds in Northeast Nigeria have never been to school. And many of these are girls. And a barrier for these girls is early marriage. We see that many of the girls in this region are married off at a very early age. This is a key priority for Save the Children and something that we definitely want to work with local partners, with the local government, and with communities themselves.
You have mentioned that you all did some research and you're going to be putting out that information. What research did you recently do?
Well, we had a research team visiting Maiduguri recently to look at the barriers for children, and we just have some preliminary results so far, but it's quite clear that what comes out from that research is that the insurgency itself has exacerbated the ongoing education crisis, and particularly highlighting first and foremost the food and hunger crisis, especially how food is a key barrier for children not attending school. A child who is hungry will not have the power or the capacity to go to school. So this is something we want to engage more in and need to focus more on as a humanitarian community, how we can see and make sure that we have integrated programming which links education to, for example, school feeding programs. So that is one of the outcomes of a report that we're currently working on.
Katerina Bu is a senior advocacy advisor for Save the Children. She spoke with reporter Kim Lewis from Oslo, Norway. In Libya, the fragile UN-backed Government of National Accord, the GNA, has struggled since 2015 to impose its authority. It's particularly weak in the east, where military strongman General Khalifa Haftar is aligned with a rival government that controls key oil export terminals. Faiz Al-Sarj, the head of the GNA, is visiting Moscow. He's seeking a Russian mediation that could help bring about a political solution to end the conflict. Ryonan Smith is managing editor of Libya Analysis. She spoke to VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawi about going to Moscow and not Washington to find a political solution.
Well, I think this shows that Russia is trying to have an increasingly dominant role within Libya, both in political and economic terms. So the fact that Russia has invited Sarraj and he is going to Russia show that they are almost trying to take over the role of the UN and some of the Western nations who have had the most important role in trying to bring about a political agreement between Libya's competing factions.
Could Moscow pressure General Khalifa Haftar, commander of the Libyan National Army, to negotiate political deal with Sarraj instead of his military approach?
This is what Sarraj and the Government of National Accord in Tripoli are hoping for. So Sarraj and Haftar were meant to have a meeting in Cairo a couple of weeks ago. However, Haftar pulled out of this meeting and he is still taking a very anti-negotiation approach. However, because Russia is seen to be supporting Haftar, the GNA are hoping that they can persuade Russia to kind of force Haftar to take part in these negotiations. However, it is not really clear whether Russia does have that power. They are certainly influential and have some clout in the eastern camp. However, Haftar is his own man and he's quite a strong personality, so it may be that Russia doesn't actually have the ability to force Haftar to take part in these negotiations.
Why do you think Sarraj resorted to Moscow and not to Washington?
Russia, in the last few months, has been very visible on the ground in Libya. They've been engaging in Libya, not just with Haftar, but also with members of the GNA and with Sarraj. there's been a recent deal between a Russian oil company and Libya's National Oil Corporation in the last 2 weeks. So there's really a visible presence of Russia. Russia are trying to get things done in Libya, or that's the impression they're giving. Whereas with the US administration, we're still pretty clueless about what the Trump administration wants to do in Libya and what his approach is going to be. And therefore, in the absence of a clear US policy or clear US engagement on Libya, different Libyan factions are increasingly turning to Russia to play this role.
What's your assessment of prospects for ending the civil war in Libya?
Currently, what is on the table, which is a political agreement brokered by Egypt, Algeria, and Tunisia, the aim of which is to bring together delegations of the competing factions to try and agree amendments to the Libyan political agreement. I think that is the most promising route to try and find some sort of power-sharing agreement and a way out of the civil war and conflict. However, that does depend on getting all of the parties together and in one place, which so far hasn't happened. And a key figure and element in that is Haftar and what he decides to do. If he continues to take a militaristic approach, then I think that will only escalate the conflict, unfortunately. So a lot does ride on whether it's Russia or other regional powers being able to persuade Haftar to enter these negotiations and try to come to a meaningful power-sharing agreement.
Rhiannon Smith is managing editor of Libya Analysis. She spoke to VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawy. Mali's three largest terrorist groups have announced they are joining forces and pledging allegiance to the leader of Al-Qaeda, Ayman al-Zawahiri, Ansar Dine, al-Murabitun, and Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb made the announcement in a video. They said the new group is called Jamaat at-Nusrat al-Islam wal-Musalimin, meaning support of Islam and Muslims. Although French troops pushed back an insurgency in northern Mali in 2013, sporadic fighting and attacks continue despite the presence of UN peacekeeping troops. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Zuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Kurt Bynum, thanks for choosing and the Voice of America.
Hello, music lovers. Habari! This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in this Sunday and quench your thirst for awesome African music. I have fresh news and interviews from my recent trip to Zanzibar and Nairobi. Tums, baby. I've got great classics from Cameroon and Nigeria, listener requests, and new releases. So tune in to VOA Africa's FM station this Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC. Bon appétit!
Tuesday on Health Chat, host Lenore Modou takes a look at pediatric cancer, a diagnosis that turns the lives of the entire family upside down. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-619-9942. 3111. Else chat this Tuesday at 1730 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.